Coming up a little later on Inside Hockey, Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet will join us. Kind of, you just heard what we were talking about there. He's the one that proposed taking out icings and offsides in hockey. And it's not imminent or anything. It's just a conversation, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And I'm sure I'm going to do the same thing, because I always love when I talk to Chris Johnson, our NHL insider, senior hockey writer. He joins us. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Rob?
I'm good. I bold-faced strip ripped off the morning show in Toronto today and had Merrick on to talk about his idea of just doing away with offsides and icings. I loved those conversations.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Turn it on its side.
Sure, you know, it reminds me a few years ago when Brendan Chan still worked for the league, he was doing research and development camps in the summer, and they would try stuff like that, but, you know, try to imagine a different looking rink and do it and have teams out there. And you know, I've heard that the NHL is going to actually do an R&D camp again next summer. So I'm not sure 100% they'll try that out, but, you know, back at the GM's meeting in March, they did have the GMs go into groups and try to imagine what hockey might look like in 10 or 15 years down the road, you know, remove themselves from the day-to-day issues.
That's
with
right,
their teams,
yeah.
and do just that.
Yeah, I forgot about that. You know, Jeff brought up an interesting point, too, and I had never heard it, but, you know, a research and development camp is one thing, but if there was ever a way to create some sort of league, only because you need to work out and find out what some of the unintended consequences would be, right? It's okay to do it for one game, but what if you do it over the course of a couple of weeks? How would coaches adapt? I thought that was kind of a unique and fresh take.
Well, you know, my first thought is that it would totally change the game. I mean, that sounds obvious, but if you just imagine, there's no reason necessarily to go back out of the offensive zone, even if the puck goes down into your end. You could have a player that just hangs out.
Yep.
And, you know, how would teams defend that? I mean, it could have some bad consequences, frankly. I mean, I don't know.
Sure it could.
It's so different, it's almost hard to imagine what it would look like. I mean, it would certainly solve the issue of, you know, the quarter inch of a blue line goal review, which is something clearly the league didn't like with the way they've changed that rule entering this season. But, you know, I think you'll see this conversation happen more and more because, in addition to Jeff, I've heard a few people sort of bat around the idea, and, you know, maybe we'll see it experimented at some point in our lifetime.
We are seeing a crackdown. I don't think it's an emphasis. I think it's a crackdown on a couple of rules, slashing and face-offs. Clearly, don't count Brad Marchand as a fan of the face-off one. What are you hearing in terms of, you know, we saw a lot of power plays here in Alberta last night. What are you hearing from around the rest of the league as preseason is just kind of getting its feet under it right now?
Well, I haven't heard as many complaints other than Brad Marchand, but he complained loudly and vociferously enough for everybody else. I mean, my impression, honestly, is that especially at the start of preseason, the refs are going to try to set the standard and to get the attention. And, you know, when it comes to the face-off rule in particular, to me, that's one that's pretty simple to adapt to for the centers. I mean, I realize that those are competitive situations on the ice. And, you know, I think really what's gotten the NHL's craw with regards to face-offs is when you see guys go down on one knee in the process of winning a face-off. And this is trying to keep them more upright, to keep them a safe or a specific different distance away from the dot and, you know, perhaps eliminate any advantage they can glean from that. But, you know, to me, this one will be, even though there were 6 or 7 penalties in the games last night, 4 face-off violations, I think you give the best players in the world a little bit of time to adapt to this again and to understand that this is going to be the standard. I don't think that will be a big issue in the season. You know, where I'm really interested to see is if the slashing standard is kept where we're seeing it. And, you know, there's a game today, 5 seconds into the game, there's a slashing penalty. And then, you know, that had become a pretty more or less acceptable way of slowing, you know, skill players down, I think, specifically. And, you know, to me, it's in the league's interest to do what it can to crack down on those sorts of plays. Because, again, I think we're talking largely about ways used to have the most creative hockey players, Johnny Hockey being one of them, but Connor McDavid.
Yep.
You know, guys around the league that do things that excite, you know, fans and, you know, become highlight reel goals. And, you know, if that stays, you know, to me, that might have more of a lasting impact going forward. But, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, it's fair to have a cynical view on these things because, you know, clearly over time we've seen the league focus on specific issues and it kind of falls to the background. You know, I'm not sure how long this will remain. But, you know, I think it makes sense to at least try to do it, because I think it allows the skilled players to do what they do best.
It's funny you went that direction. One of the other themes of our program here today, and it was something that was brought up earlier, was, you know, the unintended consequences. You and I have talked about this before. You put a rule in, you best of intentions, but you don't never know quite exactly how it's going to play itself out. If you continue with this standard of slashing to remove it from the game, what is the unintended consequences? Is it possible we could see more embellishment?
That's possible. I think you're going to see probably a lot of power plays as well. And you know, not everybody likes that. Watched a game somewhere along the way where it feels like every minute or two there's a power play going one direction or the other, and that can disrupt the flow of a game. I mean, certainly it would probably lead to more scoring, as we saw back in 05-06 coming out of that lockout when they really cracked down on obstruction. And we saw teams get tons more power plays than they had in the past. And you know, that saw a bump in goal scoring. But you know, I think obstruction is sort of the natural counterbalance when you say that. Mm-hmm. Embellishment rather than obstruction is that's what happens next when you say that everything's going to be called differently. You know, and it was what, 3-4 years ago the league targeted that and you know, instituted the system where players are fined if they're, you know, found to be doing that multiple times over a season. So you know, I sort of liken it to when you're disciplining a child. At times, you focus on certain things for a little while. You move on to something else. You might return to where you are, but you know, really, every season there's a message for the referees about areas that the hockey operations department wants to focus on. And you know, at least in this case, it sounds like that message has already been conveyed really to every player in the league in terms of the league sending out videos and making everyone aware this is where it's going to be at.
He's Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, senior hockey writer, our guest here on Flames at 5. I'm just surmising here that probably where you are, you've been talking about this topic more than what we just talked about. But can you bring us up to speed in your perspective on Joffrey Leupel and, I guess, to a lesser extent, Jared Cowan, both with the Leafs at some point with injury issues and both suggesting that they're none too happy with the way the Maple Leafs handled it. Is there some smoke or is there some fire with this smoke?
Well, there's certainly been quietly the suspicion maybe that the Leafs have run afoul of things. And, you know, it might even just be that they've stretched the letter of the law to its furthest degree over the years. I mean, you can go back to things like the Dion Phaneuf trade to Ottawa where they had to really convinced Milan Mihalik at that time to waive his no-trade clause. It took 2 days of cajoling before they could complete that deal. He played half a season after coming to Toronto and spent all of last year in the American Hockey League, which is sort of deemed as, you know, it's a little underhanded, I guess, after, you know, convincing him to come to Toronto to do that. You know, the Jared Cowan situation, you know, resulted in an arbitration hearing, which the Leafs won. You know, the Joffrey Leupel one almost stands alone as well in a separate kind of way. But, you know, clearly the Leafs have tried to stretch the mechanisms of the CBA to their furthest degree and to use their ability to spend, you know, an inordinate amount of money as an advantage, you know, especially during the rebuild. You're not seeing it quite so much now because, you know, they've got more of the pieces of the team they wanted to build in place. But, you know, it's there's a lot of elements to this story. And, you know, the biggest thing that I'd like to point out really is that we still don't truly know what Joffrey Leupel intended with that comment. And, you know, it's clear he's probably not happy. I don't think a lot of players would be happy if their career was sort of slipping away and they didn't maybe have as much control over it as they wish to have. But we don't know if he's kidding, if he's just trying to stir the pot, or if he actually is healthy and believes that the Leafs, you know, failed them in a medical and, you know, really and shouldn't have, and that they are cheating. I mean, it's just hard to know. And you know, Joffrey Leupel has really gone underground for the last 19 months since he was the last playing member with the Leafs. I know a lot of reporters here locally have attempted to speak with him, and, you know, he's really hasn't said too much other than, you know, about a year ago at this time, he was telling people that he thought he was ready to play, that he was hoping to resume his career wherever that was going to be. So, you know, it's an ongoing situation. I think we'll get a little bit of a glimpse into whether he believes, you know, that he should have passed that physical because he has the option by Thursday night at 5:00 Eastern to indicate his willingness to get a second opinion, which is something every player has under the CBA, and, you know, perhaps he'll do that. I don't, if I was handicapping it, I would say it's a bit of a long shot that he will, but, you know, he might elect to do that, and that in some ways puts the Leafs on trial. And it goes from now, not just the whispers and the thought that maybe they're stretching the rules, and, you know, it probably, I would think, lead the NHL to at least look a little bit closer at it and to scrutinize whether the right thing's been done here.
Chris, let's change direction a little bit to a couple of stories we haven't talked about here that you might have some insight. First of all, the Ottawa Senators. When last we spent a lot of time together talking about the Senators was in the playoffs, and one of the storylines there was injuries. Here we are starting a new season, and the Senators, we know about Erik Karlsson, but continue to be hit rather hard by the injury bug, don't they?
They do. I'm actually at the Air Canada Center now in Toronto, and the Sens are playing here tonight. And if you look at their lineup, you wouldn't know very many of their players unless you've been watching the Baby Sens play in recent years. And, you know, I do think part of that is that they're scared to lose more regulars. And look, I mean, every team plays between 6 and 8 preseason games. I think every manager to some degree is concerned about getting through those games with their regular players as healthy as possible. But in Ottawa's case, they took another hit last night with Colin White blocking a shot in a game that they were winning by 4 goals with 4 minutes or so left in the third period. And, you know, he suffered a broken left wrist. So, you know, it's just one of these things. It's going to be a tough start to the year for them. I think it was going to be difficult in some ways to manage the season out of last year. It was just such a surprise that they made it to double overtime of Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final, that they were, you know, one bounce or one shot away from playing for the Stanley Cup. I mean, that was beyond anyone's expectation for that team last year. I think that was going to be a sort of a difficult thing to manage this year, because it's hard to know where the expectation should be. But now they're starting without Erik Karlsson for still an undetermined amount of time, but, you know, possibly the first month. You know, they lost Mark Mathod in the expansion draft, so that's their first D pairing they won't have available on opening night. They won't have Clark MacArthur. They won't have Colin White. I mean, this is they're going down. They're testing their depth right now, and, you know, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that Bruce Kerriok out of Ottawa had a story this afternoon about their renewed interest in Matthew Shane as a possible fill-in, because, you know, I look at them as a team that needs some help to get through mm-hmm. this wave of injuries they're going to start with.
Well, okay, you brought up Matt Duchene's name. There's starting to be those rumors again. Now, he's in Colorado's camp, and he's there and says he's happy to be there. But I understand Vancouver's name has come up. Ottawa's name has come up. You know, we saw a trade over the weekend, which maybe caught a few people off guard. Demers going to Arizona and McGinn going back to Florida. Is there anything imminent then on Matt Duchene, do you think?
I wouldn't say imminent, but, you know, it does seem probably that it's possible he gets moved before the start of the season. And look, you point out, he said he's happy to be there, but he's saying it through gritted teeth. If you're watching those quick video clips that he's agreed to do during his time in camp, I mean, it's not a surprise to anyone. He really thought he was going to be moved in the summer. There was some doubt about whether he would report. And, you know, I think he did so under the advisement of his agent more than, you know, what was in his heart. And, you know, there's the possibility that he's moved. You know, I still wonder about Columbus as a potential destination. You know, they have some depth on their blue line. I think any deal that we're going to see Matt Duchene involved in, I would be surprised if it didn't include at least a high-end blue line prospect, if not a player they can insert into their lineup right away. There's some options in Columbus. I think Carolina fits the same bill with, you know, such a stable young defenseman there. Wonder if maybe Noah Hanifin could be tied to that situation. That's the difficulty for Ottawa, is unless they're willing to move Thomas Chabot, who's their top pick, top prospect at the moment, which I'd be surprised if they were. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, they have a piece to get it done there. Would Cody Ceci do it? I mean, to me, I'm a bit skeptical about that. But you know, it feels as though there's the pressure's mounting a little bit towards the Avalanche side of things to get things done. I mean, Joe Sakic's been very patient here, but, you know, I think he has to weigh the merits as well of keeping a player who says he's happy, but, you know, we all know is really not too happy to be there with that team for much longer.
Let's finish off with a couple of positive stories. One, your thoughts on Jonathan Drouin and the huge contribution he made within the Montreal community today, a $500,000 donation as well, hoping to raise $5 million in the next 10 years. This, of course, P.K. Subban making a huge donation to the Montreal Children's Hospital. This is pretty cool.
It is, and you know, he's putting even more on himself, which I think is interesting because, you know, it's not every 22-year-old Quebecer that would want to play for the Montreal Canadiens, even though it would seem like a dream from afar. I mean, it's just a lot of pressure that comes with that in that market. You know, I think especially on a team that needs the scoring help, and, you know, he's right now being written in as their first-line centerman and expected to bring a wave of offense. And, you know, he, putting himself more in the community, more in the spotlight, you know, I think it's great, obviously, that he's willing to help out this charity and do that. But, you know, he's really assuming some responsibility and, you know, showing that he wants to be in Montreal. And I guess we could conclude that when he signed a 6-year extension, you know, shortly after that trade in the summer from Tampa Bay. But you never really know if yeah. Someone in their heart wants to be there. I mean, he didn't get a say in the trade. He didn't request that trade. It caught him by surprise, you know, when it actually went down. But, you know, I think that this is a positive story for Jonathan Drouin, and, you know, he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders, you know. But certainly among the top however many players in the league we want to call it, 10 in the league, that I think have, you know, a lot to honestly prove this year. I mean, we know he's a talented player, but just to see, you know, what he can be. You know, so much of his time in Tampa was marred by, you know, not getting the ice time he wanted or not playing in the situations offensively as much as he wanted. Well, he's going to get all that in Montreal. He's going to get all the attention. He's going to be in his hometown. He's probably going to become the most popular, I would say, francophone athlete in Quebec as a result of his association with the Canadians and doing things like he did today. And, you know, that's a lot for him to carry around with him. And, you know, we'll see how he handles all that on the ice.
Last one for you. You and I are over here in North America, but half a world away, the Los Angeles Kings and the Vancouver Canucks are getting set to play a pair of games in Shanghai and Beijing as the National Hockey League once again tries to establish itself in the China market. From what I've seen, and I'm not sure what you're hearing, but from what I've seen, the pictures are spectacular. I know they had a foggy practice today, but there seems to be a lot of interest. There seems to be some really neat stuff coming out of China on this trip.
Well, China, for sure, is a legitimate growing hockey country. I mean, I'm not sure how long it'll be before we're considering them a place where future NHL players are being produced at a great rate. But, you know, in terms of the number of arenas that have been built in that country, even the fact that they send a national host broadcaster to the Stanley Cup Final to broadcast the games back in China. I mean, it's been, in the last few years, a real surge. And, you know, I can only imagine this will further that goal. And, you know, it does look pretty neat. I was watching some of the footage this morning after waking up of them. And, you know, I would imagine, you know, if you're the Sedins or, you know, veteran NHL players, the idea of being over in China to play hockey games is something different. And, you know, it's a long way to go in some ways during the training camp and then the preseason. But, you know, I think this will be the start of a trend. And, you know, I would suspect it won't be too long, assuming everything goes well logistically, before we're seeing regular season games played there, you know, the same way we have in Sweden and other countries in Europe in the past. And, you know, this is sort of the first, I would think, foray of many for the NHL into China. And, you know, they've already got some prominent sponsorship lined up and sold to Chinese companies. I mean, they're hoping this is a whole new market and something that maybe can bump up hockey-related revenues and make that cap go up in the future as a place of growth for the league.
Good stuff as always, my friend. Chris, we will catch up with you on Thursday. Enjoy the next couple of days.
Will do, Rob. Thank you.